Suns can do a little celebrating with a W here.
For the game! Got it! Off the glass! Devin Booker!
You're listening to The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns show, part of Almighty Baller Radio.
Hello and welcome everybody into The Suns Solar Panel. I'm your host, Greg Esposito. We've given Dave King and Tim Tompkins the night off simply because they're both far too crushed by tonight's draft lottery results to actually get behind the mic. But I'm always here for you, slaving away behind the mic. Happy to come and call this emergency session of the Solar Panel, kind of a group therapy session here on Tuesday night after the draft lottery. And joining me, when I thought, you know, who's a guy that I can call up and will understand my pain, can commiserate with me, maybe even talk me off the ledge or push me off of it one way or the other? It was Zach Clark, the host of the Zach Clark Show on ESPN Tucson. Zach, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Greg, I'm doing better now that I'm on with you. But as far as Suns Nation is concerned, certainly a crowd or a cloud, I should say, over the sun. Rough night. You know, I was watching it unfold during the show, and I could tell that it was going in order, in reverse. They go from 12 down, and then things started to get a little squirrely, and you saw the four. It felt like it happened so quickly. And, you know, 6 years in a row of tough luck ends with the fourth overall pick. I'm going to let you take the four on this one, but that just got to be a really rough pill to swallow.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever been in a car accident?
I actually am fortunate enough to have never been in a car accident. So this is going somewhere. I'm sorry. I won't be able to help you any further.
Well, you're just going to have to take my word for it then. I was in a...
I promise I will.
I was in a pretty massive car accident driving back to Phoenix from your neck of the woods when I was in college down in at U of A. And I'm coming up the 10, and my back tire blows out, and the car spins out of control, right? I'll admit I was going 90. I was a 20-year-old kid with my car packed with all my stuff from my apartment, heading back up for the summer. I was driving far too fast. The tire blows out, and there's a split second that actually feels like a lifetime in a car accident where you know what's about to happen, and you're sitting there, and you're aware of it, and there is absolutely nothing you can do. And you're sitting there and you're watching and it feels like a lifetime. And that is exactly what it felt like when the Suns logo showed up at number four. When they said with the number four pick, everything kind of goes into slow motion if you're a Suns fan. And we all had a feeling that this was the way it was going to end, because that's just the luck as a Phoenix Suns fan. And yet you held out that sliver of hope. But as I said, with the fourth pick, at number four, you knew it was coming, right, and you couldn't do anything to stop it. And even though you prepared yourself, I mean, heck, I wrote a column, a special column for brightsideofthesun.com for Dave King, my arch nemesis and co-host on this show, where I basically laid it out and said, this is exactly what's going to happen. Lady Luck doesn't look good in purple and orange. It's likely going to be the fourth pick. We're going to have to deal with it. And it's either because the basketball gods hate the Suns, or on the very small chance, the off chance that the NBA draft lottery is rigged, it's not going to be rigged in the Suns' favor because of the way they affronted the athletic process by losing 14 of their last 16 games on purpose. So we knew it was coming, and yet it was still sickening to feel it happen.
Well, what I have to wonder, and maybe, and this is so unlike me to try to find a positive in any of this, but I'm not going to say that the Suns didn't need the first overall pick. It gives you incredible leverage, the ability to use it and select the next NBA superstar, the ability to use it as leverage and move back, to use it as leverage to get yourself a viable superstar already in the league, maybe a D'Angelo Russell. I don't know. Throw a name out there. But, you know, Greg, they didn't need another guard. And it feels like if you have one or two, that's what you would have had to do unless you wanted to move it. And, you know, Josh Jackson is still very much in play at four. He could go three, I suppose. I don't know what Philadelphia is going to do. They have a ton of options right there. But it, you know, it doesn't quite feel like this is 2 years ago with the Arizona Coyotes, and they ended up third and missed out on Eichel and McDavid. I know those of you who don't watch hockey doesn't mean anything, but this seems like, I know it's a two-guy draft, but you are, what do you do? What do you do if you end up with Markel Fultz? Do you have to figure out a way to deal both Knight and Bledsoe, and then rock with Ulis, and then your, you know, proverbial superstar in Devin Booker, and then whatever you'd have in Markel Fultz? I mean, is that a possibility? I don't know. It's just something I've been thinking about.
Oh, I don't think this is the end of the world by any stretch. You're not going to get the guy that's likely a bona fide superstar in Markel Fultz. You're now going to have to rely on luck once again to hopefully wind up with Josh Jackson at number four, because you could wind up being sitting there with the best guy left on the board being a point guard again at number four. And now you're not getting a guy that's a surefire winner at point guard. You're getting a guy that could potentially be a good to great point guard. And now you're left with the choice. Do we take this guy? Do we trade back and hope we can get some value for it? Or, you know, if we do take this guy, then do we trade Eric Bledsoe? It's, you're pinning your hopes on Jackson or Tatum potentially, depending on how workouts go. And what this comes down to is now Ryan McDonough has to work his magic in this draft and pick a guy that winds up blossoming and doing it quick, because he's on the last year of his deal. So a lot was riding on him tanking this year and it working out for them. So he better hope that the pick at number four turns out to be a great player and turns out to be a great player in year one, because he may not be around long enough to see the fruits of his labor if that guy doesn't. It's not the worst thing. There are, I mean, they could have wound up at five, that's for sure. But it's still, when you sit there and you sell your fan base on, we are going to lose on purpose. And that's what they did by benching Eric Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler and Brandon Knight to an extent, although some could argue that if you had played The Walking Dead, he would have actually helped you lose games. That's debatable. But the thing is, you basically told your fan base, we are losing on purpose to get the one or two pick to guarantee a superstar, and then you walk away with a fourth overall pick.
Well, here's what's not going to happen, and you and I both know this. If Boston moves out of that pick, it's unlikely going to be to Phoenix, right? But is it possible, could Phoenix swap with Philadelphia? What do the Sixers want? Because I really think, and you made the point that it'll come down to workouts, but I like Josh Jackson. I like that he can play both ways. And that certainly, he has some issues, but there are a few players that don't at this point in the game. But I really think if they could get to three, then I don't think you have an issue, because do you see faults or ball sliding past one and two, especially with the Lakers having a stopper at number two?
No.
So I wonder what it would take. What it would take.
Is it worth it, though? Because now you're assuming that Philly is going to take Josh Jackson, and then you could pay a premium, and they weren't ever going to. And what are we talking? We're talking the fourth pick and Eric Bledsoe to move up one spot to get Josh Jackson? Do you really believe
in that?
Well, I don't think Philadelphia is going to touch Knight. Why would they take Knight and the third pick? Like, that's like me saying, hey, I got this pile of garbage and $20. You want to trade it for that $30 you got in your hand? Like, why would anybody do that? Like,
I'm a desperate man trying to get rid of a terrible contract. I'm sorry.
we all are. I mean, I get it. You're gonna have to do something to sweeten that or take somebody's bad contract back there. But it's just, I don't know. I'm trying to find a positive, but it's tough because, and mark this down as a hot take, if you will, but the Phoenix Suns are now the Chicago Cubs. With the Cubs winning a title last year, the Phoenix Suns and their fan base takes the mantle of most miserable franchise. It's the 50th season. There's not a chance in hell they're winning a title this year. So you're going 50 years without a title. You've had, if you've had any luck, it's been bad luck. And then you've been screwed on numerous occasions by the league in terms of suspensions and other things. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the draft lottery was rigged, but they've just had, if they've had luck, any kind of luck, it's been bad luck all the time. I'm Eeyore when it comes to this team right now. It hurts. You know, and this is from a guy who was paid for 5 years to tell you the bright side of everything going on with this team and had to walk a company line for 5 years. And the fan in me was screaming as if it was a prisoner inside my own body.
I've got two thoughts on what you just said there. First of all, you are talking to a guy right now that's wearing a Detroit Lions t-shirt. So when we're talking about miserable franchises, I may have some thoughts on that. But second of all, I have to wonder, I don't want to get into bashing, but you know, I had you on my show today and I had you on my show then. I don't know how on earth you were able to walk that line, because some of the things that were going on then, and I think things have improved to a point, but some of the decisions that have made, in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine who is a Bostonian, and he was talking about how lucky the Celtics have gotten. I mean, they get the good side of one of the worst trades ever, in which they end up with a number one pick tonight. And then Isaiah Thomas falls in their lap. So certainly some of the decisions made then were poor. But I guess you have to ask yourself now, if you're a Suns fan, you know, are you confident in the regime turning it around? I like last year's draft. The results aren't all the way in yet, but I like what they were able to do, even in the second round. Ulis is great. I think he's a guy that, especially for what he's being paid, is viable. So I'm okay with what they did last year, but some of the choices they made around the draft have been really poor. So I guess we have to decide what level of confidence we have going forward, because even if they would have won the lottery, it would not have guaranteed them the right choice. It would have only guaranteed them the first choice.
I do not disagree with you there. And honestly, I very much believe in Ryan McDonagh and what he's building and the team he's putting together and the quality of talent that he's putting together. He basically was left with when he came in, a cupboard that was so bare that even spiders didn't want to make webs in there, all right? It was completely empty, and that was thanks to Lance Blanks, who, honestly, you talk about dark days. Lance Blanks and the time that he spent as a general manager of the Phoenix Suns is, quite frankly, why this rebuild has taken so long. He, in a three-and-a-half-year period that he was there, he set them back probably more than a decade with bad choices and bad moves and bad decisions that Ryan McDonagh has spent most of his time sitting there trying to clean up. Now, that's not to say Ryan hasn't made his own mistakes along the way. There's no doubt about that. But he's made more good moves than bad moves. And if you look at where this roster is, there is a hope for the future now where – 3.5 years ago, you couldn't say that when Lance Blanks was running the ship. So I believe in what Ryan McDonagh is trying to do here. And I think he will find the best player available, whether that's at four, whether they trade up for a deal or they move back. They will find talent in this draft. I just don't know that he's going to have enough time to see this come to fruition in the long run. And I'm still wondering, how does this roster fully come together in the end? This is a lot of great young talent that's been accumulated, but I don't think you're quite at a point where it's a full team. How do you do that? This offseason has to be all about, how do we shape the roster now? Because you can't tank again. You can't go through that again and try to sell your fan base on, let's lose again. It's just not a way you can do that.
Especially if you're looking for, at some point in the near future, a new stadium, right? I mean, there's been talk about that, though. I think I have a little problem with the Sun Stadium, but that's a different story. But no, you can't ask your fans to wait any longer. And so I wonder if that's the thinking. And, Greg, you talk about the young talent, and boy, it is there. And they have a lot of it. I mean, Was it the Suns at one point this year that had a roster that was the average age of 20 years old? I mean, that was younger than a couple of the teams in the NCAA tournament, starting five. I mean, there's no doubt. So what's the thought that maybe you turn that pick into somebody that's 24, you know, or 23?
Oh, I think it would make a lot of sense. If you could find the right guy and make a move where you trade maybe a young asset that you have on the roster and that pick and turn it into somebody that would play well alongside Devin Booker and that his time frame aligns with that, I'm totally fine with that. Because at some point you can't have any more 19, 20, 21-year-old kids on your roster. You know, like there's right. not a legit minor league system. This isn't baseball where you can stock the farm system. You got 15 roster spots, and at some point you've got to actually turn these kids with potential into a winning basketball team. So, yes, I'm downtrodden about where this pick fell, but I think there's a lot of options still on the table to make it work in the long run. What really pisses me off, though, is do the Celtics and the Lakers really need any more help? Do they really need any more luck? Was the sun not peeking through the dozens of championship banners that these two organizations have? Was it really that they needed the 1 and 2 pick? Because if you want to put fuel on the fire that the draft lottery is rigged, this is the kind of year that happens where you go, well, the Celtics got the first pick and the Lakers got the second, and now you're aligning a potential rivalry between Markelle Fultz on one coast, Lonzo Ball on the other, and it could rekindle the entire Celtics-Laker rivalry for the long term for another decade or two. That's good for the NBA. Major markets being good is good for the NBA. So Philly winding up 3 is good for the NBA. Like that's what makes me wonder. And I'm not putting the tinfoil hat on and joining Mel Gibson in all sorts of crazy rants here. I don't fully believe that there's some massive conspiracy theory to keep the Suns down. But I'll tell you this, I do believe in karma. And I think karma gave it right back to the Suns this year with losing on purpose like that. And you wind up getting the results of it at this point.
Yeah. I mean, but here's a couple of things. One, for me, if you're going to use the Suns as an example for being punished for losing on purpose, how do you explain Philadelphia and all the picks that they've come up with? I know they haven't been very good, but eventually, and I think very soon, they're going to turn the corner and probably be really good. And the other thing, when it comes to the lottery in Boston, remember, yes, Boston won the lottery, but that's only because of two things, both involving the Brooklyn Nets. One, the Nets won, 9 games? They were awful. And two, they made one of the worst trades in NBA history in 2013, and it's going to bite them in the ass. This is the third of the fourth season that will bite them in the ass. They're not going to start being good probably until 2020. I mean, think about it. They've already lost 2 first-round draft picks. They have to swap out this year, so they're going to be terrible again next year, in which they don't get a draft pick because it will still be owned by Boston. So in 2019, they'll finally get a first-round draft pick, which I'm sure will be very high because what are the odds they win between this year, next year, and the following? What are the odds they win 35 games total?
Oh, I mean, let's be honest. They're pretty poor. Zero. There's not much of a chance of it. You're right. The Celtics benefited by a complete inept ownership in Brooklyn.
That's what it is. So, again, it looks bad, but the reason that, I mean, if we want to, I don't want to turn this political, but if we want to talk about Russian interference, we're getting a ton of it coming from the Brooklyn Nets.
You're completely correct. We have completely, the athletic, the NBA and the draft has completely been overtaken by the Russians interfering with it. Unfortunately, it wasn't to their benefit in any way. They didn't quite figure out how the draft lottery works. So,
this is not going to be the basketball version of the movie Draft Day. Thank God.
Oh God! Do we have to talk about depressing and bad anymore? That Draft Day is right up there on that list for sure. I don't know. I came into this and I went on what was probably one of my more epic Twitter rants a fire storm, if you will, after that draft lottery, which it all should have been hashtagged things I wanted to say while I was working for the organization but couldn't. That was five years of
things
that just came out.
You should rename this podcast.
What was that?
Please rename this podcast to that, please.
I should have a segment.
Things that I wanted to say. Yes, I love it.
I guess it's not as bad. In the end, after thinking about it and talking through it a little bit in this therapy session, it's not as bad as it could be. If they wind up with Josh Jackson at 4, it actually is probably the best case scenario. And one great thing that came out of not having the first or second pick is we don't have to spend another ounce of energy debating whether LaVar Ball will have any impact on the Phoenix Suns franchise or who they do or don't draft. So that is a big bright spot in the fact that they wound up with the 4th pick. Because if I had to listen and had to waste any more breath on LaVar Ball and the sideshow that is that guy, I would have lost my mind. So good riddance that he's going to be a Laker. Hopefully he and LaVar can help take them down from the inside. They've done a pretty good job of it without their help, without LaVar and Lonzo's help. But hopefully they can have an impact there. And, you know, I think Ryan McDonough can figure this out in the end. I just hope he has enough time to see it come to fruition.
I didn't know if there was going to be the Suns drafting 2nd, if you and John Gambardella were going to have to arm wrestle to see how that was all going to turn out.
That's way too much Italian in one fight. I'm just going to say that. And nobody needs to see that. John Gambardella is a 50-year-old man who is cut like a 20-year-old. I'm a 30-year-old man that built like a 70-year-old, all right? So it would not have been pretty. But I still would have been right when it came to Lonzo Ball in the end. He just would have kicked my ass.
I agree with you. I agree with you. You probably still would have gotten your ass kicked. But you've been right, whatever that's worth. I love it.
So at least we don't have to deal with that, and we can look at other options. It's gonna be an interesting 6 weeks leading up to this draft, because I think a lot is going to change. You're gonna hear a lot of trade talk, and come June 22nd, the Suns are gonna be a different team. I think. I think we're gonna see either a trade or something's gonna give with this team between now and draft night.
Let me ask you about this, and this is a little off topic, but I think it all flows together. What about this summer? You know, what about the free agency period? Do you think that maybe the Suns, and I know that it's not an ideal destination, at least at the moment. I think that if you have money, living in and around Paradise Valley and or Scottsdale is A-okay. I really don't see many downsides to it. But again, I understand franchise and recent history makes it a little more difficult, but I wonder if they think that they can, as we talked earlier, package for a trade and then snag somebody in free agency, because as rough as this team is, if Sean McDonough can do, how many McDonald's have I got in a row? 3? Ryan? There we go.
Ryan, there we go. We got the so right one finally.
Well, I mean, if I had brothers like that, good Lord, I can't even imagine.
You forgot Terry McDonough, too, who's the vice president of player personnel for the Cardinals. Don't leave Terry out.
Oh, man. See, the families, there's too many and they're too successful. I can't even keep them all straight. But if Ryan McDonough can do what you hope he can do, the Suns can be in a good spot. I mean, a good spot, relatively speaking, to where they are right now. To where this is a team that, you know, I'm watching this Diamondbacks game right now, and all I've asked the Diamondbacks for the last few seasons is to be competitive as the season winds down, and I think I'm going to get that from them this year. Are they going to make the playoffs? I don't know. Are they going to make a run? I don't know. Am I going to watch till the end? Probably. And, you know, for the Suns right now, that's all I'm asking. And I know the fans want this long title drought to end, but I think for now, not even settling, but they will take progress moving forward and just any sign of hope. And I think if they can have some success in the draft in any way and then carry that into the summer and have a nice free agency period, then maybe they're not as far away. And then McDonough can see the future with his job like you would like him to. And so it's all possible. It's just, It's going to take some luck, as you always need in the draft, and it's going to take some ultimate salesmanship. But I think all those things are possible.
I don't disagree. And if I've learned anything from time around Ryan McDonough, is the fact that the unexpected is what will happen. You do not usually see the big move he's going to make coming. Nobody saw them trading back into the draft lottery last year and getting a second player in Marquise Chris. Nobody saw the Eric Bledsoe trade coming or the Markieff Morris trade that turned a disgruntled head case into a lottery pick. Ryan McDonough will find a way to surprise us this offseason. And will they make the playoffs? Probably not next year, unless they do something extremely crazy. But I think eventually it will turn around, and I think they'll be better this upcoming season than they were this past season. But man, on a night like tonight, it's not easy to find the silver lining. But I appreciate that you at least tried to help me down that path tonight.
But I don't think any of that is too much of a stretch. But look, you're right. I was watching the same you were. And again, when you see that four flip over into that bright orange ball with purple lettering across it, you feel like you always do. And it was like your column. You knew it was coming, but even though you knew, there was a part of you that held out hope that you were going to be wrong. And this is one of those rare times when you say, oh crap, I was right. Mm-hmm. So I get the feeling, and I get the, all these thoughts are well and good. Look, I cover Arizona football and basketball on a regular basis. And you look at Arizona basketball, and they have all this talent, and it comes up short. And Arizona football, I mean, they're just rolling down a hill faster and faster and faster. So I get the lack of hope and the rise of hope and then the cruel thrashing of it. So I understand all the negative feelings. And these positives, I say them effortlessly, but executing them is going to take maximum effort. Oh. So don't get me wrong. There's a long way to go here, but it's all tenable.
Well, let's just be honest. The ultimate Suns fan is Bane, because he had one of the best quotes in The Dark Knight Rises, where, and people know, if you know me, you know I quote Batman a lot, but he said, "Without hope, there's no true despair." And there is nothing more true, if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, than that statement.
I think that is perfect. Perfect.
Well, we will end it there. He is Zach Clark. You can catch him on the Zach Clark Show on ESPN Tucson. You can watch it on their Facebook page too. So if you need some sports talk and quality sports talk, you can watch it. I recommend having a second browser window open so you don't have to actually look at Zach and his beard, but you can enjoy the show. So Zach, thanks so much, man, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, Greg, always my pleasure. Thanks for letting me join the therapy session.
All right. As a reminder, you can find the show on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find podcasts. Please leave us a 5-star review. We will read some of those on the normal weekday edition or weekend edition of the Sun Solar Panel. So for Zach Clark, I'm Greg Esposito, and thanks for listening to this emergency therapy session of the Solar Panel.